machine.
WMFO Medford 91.5 FM. It is The Big Picture. Derek Gary and Shea Spillane with you until 9 o'clock tonight. 855-915-9636 is the telephone number. 855-915-WMFO. Spell it on your phone. You get put through to the studio. We have a fun chat. We love to hear from our listeners.
We do indeed.
And coming up later tonight, we're going to be talking about Facebook and their wonderful tangled world of regulations.
That is, what's the word I'm looking for? Hypocritical.
Yeah,
that's
just,
the word I'm looking
just
for.
A bit in places. You may have missed this yesterday, but Facebook published their secret list of community guidelines.
It's an adorable read.
Out in the public, yeah, and almost from the very beginning, it is hugely problematic.
Oh, yeah, I felt as though I was reading Poo and Poo Corner, or whatever it's called.
It goes a long way toward explaining why Facebook is the cesspool that it is.
Well, and ironically, we'll get into that later, but ironically it does, I mean, it's kind of the antithesis for what it was originally joined to be, but we'll get to that later. And, for now.
And there are parts of it that they completely ignore, and we'll talk about that later too.
Oh, yes, we will.
I can vouch from this from experience and give you evidence online right now, but we'll get into all of that later tonight. But in the meantime, I'm sure there are things happening in the world that we need to know about. Shea Spillane, what
do we
got?
There are indeed, especially in our local world, because in local news, the City of Boston Zoning Board has approved the plans to build a new boutique hotel on Dot Ave. Last July, it was reported that Evergreen Property Group proposed a 159-room hotel on the site where Enterprise Rent-A-Car is. The official address of the 8-story building is 246 through 248 Dorchester Avenue. In addition to a hotel, this project will also include about 20,000 square feet of amenity space, featuring a restaurant, lounge, and outdoor deck. There will also be a valet parking garage for about 60 vehicles, and commercial retail space are also planned.
Is this going to be surrounded by a wall and security?
I mean, seriously.
This is Fields Corner, right?
So this is just my family grew up on Fields Corner. This is just north of Fields Corner.
Okay.
Or just south. It's closer to Sullivan Circle. The main Columbia Circle.
Yeah. Okay. Cuz being of a certain age, I used to perform stand-up comedy at a place called the Emerald Isle.
Yes, which is in the heart of Fields Corner.
Which is in Fields Corner.
So the Enterprise is between Fields Corner and Columbia Circle.
And the thing about that room,
I still perform comedy in Fields Corner.
Was 99% of the time, well, not even 99%, we'll say 90% of the time, everything was chill, everything was cool, everything was fine. That other 10% of the time, you had people with guns running around. And that 10% of the time was like, do I really want to go in tonight and deal with this? Or what might happen tonight?
Well, what's funny about that area is that my father grew up on Gibson Street, which is literally diagonally across from where Emerald Eye once stood.
Right.
That is the first place I ever had a drink inside a bar. I was 16, by the way. Really good fake ID.
Plus, you're tall, so you.
But it's yeah. I mean, typically, I could just get away with it. They were like, "No one that tall isn't 21." But it's interesting to me because even there's an open mic actually that runs at Blarney Stone.
Okay.
So Blarney Stone and Emerald Isle were next door to each other.
I remember drinking on the patio on the Blarney Stone many nights. Great room, and, great place.
Oh, absolutely. But what's weird is that Emerald Isle and Blarney Stone were like the same type of just like dive Irish pub. Emerald Isle shut down. Blarney Stone up their game.
The Blarney Stone.
Like Blarney Stone, looking at it now, is a million times different than it was a decade ago.
But they actually went upscale before the Emerald Isle shut down.
Well, in anticipation of that.
I want to say it might have been a year before the Emerald Isle went under. Famously, I killed the last of the Jack Daniels at the Emerald Isle.
Oh my goodness.
On their last night, I drank them out of it.
And here I thought I couldn't love you anymore, Dave.
So, yeah, I was the one that had the last Jack Daniels at the Emerald Isle, and proud of that.
But it's funny to see, I mean, I grew up, like I said, my father grew up on Gibson Street, which is two blocks down from there. And there used to be this wonderful Italian place called Nanina's, which is now Tedeschi's and an Army Navy store. And it's so strange to see it develop as it has. I remember the first time I went to the open mic at the Blarney Stone. I'm walking up the street. I just instinctually parked in front of my grandparents' house. And then was like, I'm not going here. What are you doing? But then I walked out to Dot Ave and I saw a drug deal happening in the park.
Yeah.
On the west side of Dot Ave. And then just as I was watching that, I looked to my right and there was a guy on a bike in bike shorts with Whole Foods
bags on either side of the... Yeah. It's gentrification is sometimes a good thing, but it's also some kinds...
It's been a long, slow road back for Fields Corner, because, I mean, this has been going on for more than 10 years
honestly,
now.
Ashmont Grill started the fire in terms of Dorchester becoming gentrified, because I remember when Ashmont Grill opened, that literally I got back from college, and my father said to me, name any restaurant. Like, I came back for a weekend, and he said, name any restaurant you want to go to in Boston. I said, I want to go to Nanina's. I want to get that chicken parm, and I want to get some of their house salad dressing to go. By the way, guys, this was the best salad dressing you've ever tasted. But he said, I've got some good news for you and some bad news for you. Nanina's is now a Subway and an Army Navy Sub.
Yeah. That was the original home of BD's Furniture.
Really?
There used to be a Bradley's just up the street. And when the Bradley's shut down, the furniture store moved in and took a couple of leftover letters from the Bradley's illuminated sign and used it to make the name BD's.
Ah, Bradley's.
And I don't know if the availability of those letters dictated the name of the business or not. But now there's like BD's Furniture in a few different places. But that was the original.
Well, what's crazy is even the movie theater, I'm sorry, what I believe is now a Sprint store on the corner a block from there.
Yeah.
Used to be a movie theater that was my father's first job because it was a block from his house and he loves movies. So he'd just stand in the back and he was an usher. But it turned into, after that, a Radio Shack, which we all know what happened with that.
Yep. I remember that Radio Shack.
And now I believe it's some kind of cell phone store, but
I believe that Radio Shack was on the corner where you turn to go do another loop around the neighborhood to try and find good parking.
Precisely.
In front of the Emerald Isle.
Exactly.
And there, of course, there was the night one summer when, in the middle of a show, a couple of uniformed Boston police ran into the room. Because the way the Emerald Isle was set up, you'd walk in and there was a little bar in front of you.
Yes.
But then there was this huge room in the back, and that had the stage. That's where the comedy show was. And the back door opened up into the parking lot. So in the middle of a show, a couple of uniformed Boston police, guns drawn, come running into the room, and they're like, did you see a kid in a white shirt run through here? And we're like, nope. And they proceeded to run out the front door of the place. So,
well, if that place was still standing, you would see Spillane carved into that back room. Not from my dad. From me.
Hmm.
Well, in national news, this is mind-boggling to me. The decades-long search for the Golden State Killer, who police say committed 12 murders, 45 rapes, and 120 home burglaries over a 12-year reign in terror of California in the 70s and 80s is over. According to officials, Joseph James D'Angelo, age 72, who was a former police officer in Auburn, California, was arrested by police in Sacramento on a warrant out of Ventura County, California, for two murder charges. D'Angelo is being held without bail in the Sacramento County Main Jail, according to police records. Authorities used discarded DNA to confirm that D'Angelo was their man and arrested him at his modest home in the Sacramento suburb of Citrus Heights. They did not explain what they meant by discarded DNA.
Yeah, they're being a little coy about where they got the evidence from on this one.
This is, honestly, when I look and see that he's a retired police officer, they protect their own. It's a matter of that I think this is one of those things like, yeah, it could be him, but we shouldn't push it.
Well, they don't protect their own when the guy's a serial killer. I mean, that's there are certain things that cross the line.
But if our listeners know, if they've listened to us for long enough, that I love serial I'm very interested in serial killers.
You'll be corresponding with Mr. D'Angelo soon. Our listeners know that.
Oh, shut up.
Dear Mr. D'Angelo, you're so hot.
Trust me, I think that serial killers are terrible.
Oh, baby.
I'm very interested. Shut up. I'm very interested in how they're capable of doing this. And the Golden State Killer is something that even someone who isn't interested in serial killers would be fascinated by.
One of the questions that I have is, was this guy a cop at the time? Because we know he's a former police officer. Was he a cop at the time that he committed these crimes?
Well, that's what I'm saying is that, I mean, this was, what, the 70s and 80s. Chances are he was. He's 72. Usually people retire around maybe 60 or so.
Yeah. So if he's in uniform and he's pulling people over and raping them, How many more rapes were committed that never got reported?
Oh, definitely.
But apparently the guy's MO was to break in through a back window and just rape whoever happened to be in the house. So, you know, hopefully they got the right guy here, because this is one of the more infamous unsolved serial killings.
Like, this is a step below the Zodiac.
Well, Zodiac wasn't as prolific as this guy. Zodiac only killed, I think, 6 or 7, didn't he? That they know of?
He attempted to kill more, though. And, and the big problem was they had literally zero suspects. Whereas with the Golden State Killer, there were a couple of suspects that just kind of came up short.
Yeah.
But no, I just thought this, I mean, there were a couple national stories, but I mean.
Oh yeah, no, this is a fascinating one.
It's a huge deal.
It'd be nice to find out how, we know that they connected a bunch of the cases through DNA that was stored.
Yes.
How they got his DNA, they're not saying.
Well, that's the thing, is that it was stuff that, I think that our DNA technology has developed so much since the late 90s, the early 2000s, and onward, that the things they got in, you know, he committed these crimes in the 70s and 80s. The things they got in the late 80s, early 90s, they were like, we don't even know what to do with this.
No.
So they just tossed it aside and were like, maybe we'll figure it out later. But this was them being like, oh, this is later.
And you got to wonder, why did this guy stop when he did? Because he apparently did not leave the area.
I don't know if I can say ballsy on the radio, but...
Yeah, but like 32 years hasn't killed anyone that we know of.
But that's how they roll. I mean, you think...
They don't stop, though.
They don't stop, but they temporarily take a pass. It's like Jeffrey Dahmer. He took, 5 or 10 years between... like going on a killing spree and just laying low and then starting up again.
But 32 years is a long time. I mean, we've had guys that have taken 20 years off and then they start up again. 32 is a lot.
No, but think about the BTK killer. He had a whole family. That's why I'm so fascinated by serial killers, is that they're capable of just turning it off. Just saying, okay, I have to lay low, so I'm going to be a normal person for a little while. Like, BTK killer had 2 kids and went on with his life for like a decade, even though he was what he was.
Yeah.
And this is the same with this guy. I mean, he's a retired cop. Like, those are supposed to be the people that we trust.
Yeah. Well, it's helpful if you're investigating your own crimes as means of, you know, keeping a little distance between yourself and law enforcement.
Oh, that's so The Departed. It's so gross.
Yeah. So we'll have to see. Those details will come out in the coming days.
They will.
Definitely one of the more interesting stories to follow right now. In world news, North Korean leader Kim Jong-un announced an immediate suspension of nuclear testing and ballistic missile testing while addressing the country's ruling party on Friday. Kim also said the Pyongyi nuclear test site, which was used to conduct underground nuclear tests as recently as last year, would be shut down. The announcements come ahead of a planned summit with South Korea aimed at developing a peace treaty between the two countries, and ahead of a planned meeting with U.S. President Donald Trump. For the actual North Korean reaction, let me go over here. We've got a clip from our favorite North Korean newscaster, Ri Chun-hee. Let's see what her reaction to this is. Once again, very excited about the announcements, as she always is, Ri Chun-hee. We love
her. That
was
very inspiring.
Hopefully we can get her over here as a cultural exchange to cover some of our news now, because that would be fantastic.
I'll let her crash on my couch.
Yeah. We love her. Now, there was a report that came out today, interestingly, suggesting that the Pyongyi nuclear test site has in fact collapsed. That the whole thing, they'd run so many nuclear tests, the whole thing just fell down. So that may have motivated some of this, but this is still a pretty big announcement from North Korea. The key word here is suspended.
Not stopped.
That's what he said. I was very specific about that. An immediate suspension of nuclear and ballistic missile testing. That doesn't mean we're not ever going to do it again in the future. We reserve the right to start testing the nukes again if and when it serves our interests. But for now, we're gonna suspend this. We're gonna see where this goes. And, you know, one of the things that I said when the topic of the meeting between Donald Trump and Kim Jong-un first came up is if you're going to ask for that meeting, there has to be a give. You have to put something on the table that says, I am sincere, I want to do this. And we didn't know at the time what that was, other than the comment from the South Korean official who said that, you know, the North was interested in talking with Donald Trump, talking with the United States, putting an end to the sanctions, joining the rest of the global community. I get a feeling now that the give was, in fact, we are going to suspend our nuclear and missile testing.
Well, and it's all a matter of PR as well, to be honest. Like, it's a matter of, oh, we're doing this because A, B, C, D, E, F, G, not because of the glaring, obvious result of it failing and being a ridiculous idea.
Well, I mean, they've got the weapons, you know. And
they do, but they don't know how to use them properly. And they, it's a matter of, at this point, I mean, don't put a target on my head, Kim Jong-un, but you're an idiot. Like, it's, he doesn't know what he's doing, and he's been trying to pretend that he knows what he's doing until now, where he's been kind of proven that, oh my God, I am facing a panel of people who actually know how to manage this stuff,
I think there have been some reckless moves on the part of North Korea. We talked about them firing the missiles over Japan and things like that.
Oh, that was so dumb.
I never took their threat to hit Guam seriously because I didn't think they could do it. But the reality is they have nuclear weapons. So you could, at the very least, put a couple of nuclear bombs on fishing vessels, sail them into South Korea, and detonate them off the coast and cause a lot of trouble.
But that's the most terrifying part, is that they, yes, they do have nuclear weapons, but they don't know how to use them. They, and not even, I don't mean that in the sense they don't know how to set them off, because clearly they do. But they don't know how to use them responsibly. They don't know how to. We've had two nuclear weapons set off in our entire human history, and they were a means to end a global war.
Well, we've had two nuclear weapons set off offensively. There have been hundreds of tests that took place after
that. Yes, but I'm saying, like, two that were done with purpose.
Yes,
that
two used in wartime.
Many lives that, whether it be at the impact, I remember learning about the impact of nuclear weapons when I was in high school, and the zones of radiation based on where the atom bomb dropped.
Yeah.
It's weird that you're wearing a plaid shirt, because I remember that's what always stuck with me from Mrs. Hoy's honors history class. Yes, I remember you, Mrs. Hoy, teaching us that if you were in a certain zone, if you were wearing a plaid shirt, the pattern would just be burned into your skin.
Correct.
As you died.
Yeah.
But that's the thing, is that he acts like they're chess pieces to play.
See, nuclear war was our school shooting when I was growing up. That was the thing that was like going to end your life at any possible moment.
And when you were growing up.
And there was nothing you could do about it. Except that for all of the posturing and noise that goes on around this, the threat today is nothing at all like the threat was in the 1980s. When it was Russia and the United States pointing weapons at each other and basically daring the other to shoot
first. Are you kidding? It's the exact same situation, except it's North Korea and the United States.
Yeah, but North Korea would never get off more than one weapon before they'd be wiped off the face of the planet. North Korea knows this. Well, as I said, you know, going back to when the first meeting with Trump was talked about, Kim Jong-un has as much leverage as he is ever going to get right now. You've got the nuclear weapon, you got the intercontinental ballistic missile, you have extended your sphere of influence and threatened as many people as you're going to threaten. The only way to expand your influence beyond what you currently have is to use those weapons and win, which you know you can't. So,
But this see, is that's where
this
I think
is the
you're
point.
Wrong. That's where I think you're wrong. Is that he doesn't? He knows he can use those weapons. He doesn't know that he can't win.
Oh, he
and
knows
that's
he can't
the
win.
Danger.
He knows he can't win. He knows the response to using those weapons is going to be Pyongyang turned into 4 inches of glass under a hail of atomic fire.
Well, tell me how you really feel.
I mean, that's what's going to happen, and everyone knows it. And the best thing about nuking Pyongyang is the way the wind blows, there's only some small parts of Japan that might be affected by the fallout. And the rest of the world would be more than happy to let that happen. So this is it for him. This is what you get. You know, you're never going to be in a stronger bargaining position than you are right now. So he's gone on to the charm offensive, and we'll see how this plays out. The thing to me that's the most interesting about this is almost daily I keep hearing this story about if Trump fires Mueller. Even though there has been zero indication from the White House that President Trump is going to fire Mueller. Nothing. When Trump has been asked about it, he said, no, I'm going to let the guy do his job. I would like him to wrap it up sometime soon. There's been no indication he's going to fire him, but there has been this constant drumbeat to keep the Russia thing going about if Trump fires Mueller. And the reason why is because a major foreign policy victory, such as peace between the Koreas, completely derails the Democrats' hopes of any midterm gains. So they've got to have something, bad news, to keep pushing on CNN every single day. This would be one of the great achievements of the 21st century.
The problem is, you would think so. But since Trump became our president, all I've been able to observe is, so that went wrong. Maybe he'll fix it. Oh, no. But now this is going wrong.
So you're leaving out the part about the economy getting better, unemployment at a record low.
Oh, you've got to be kidding
me. Possible peace between the Koreas.
This is all conjecture.
No, it's not.
Yes, it is. This is all conjecture.
The unemployment figures are reported monthly. You can look at them.
Record low unemployment. Is he hiring architects to plan that wall between us and Mexico?
That's not even past the prototype stage.
He's trying to get rid of my health care, which I've already had to pay many premiums for the things that have happened to me through the past 3 months. I know many, because I work in the restaurant industry, I know many people who are foreigners living here legally, by the way, they have their papers, who have so much trouble getting a job just based on the lace that he has set over our country and the things that he has tossed into ignorant people's heads. He's not making our country better. Okay, the economy is better for now.
Record low unemployment,
based on
record high stock
really
valuations,
record low unemployment?
And home prices.
Who made that possible? Was it Trump, or did somebody set the groundwork when they were in a crappy situation to set the groundwork to set the flow of that happening? Who came before him?
GDP growth of nearly 3%. None of this came from Obama.
Are you kidding me?
All of this happened after.
Are you kidding me?
Do you remember Election Day?
All of this happened after Obama. Yeah. Just like how our economy was crap under George W. Bush. And then Obama came in and everyone blamed him for that. And then he actually brought our unemployment rate rose and then dropped immediately. Our employment rate rose and then stayed there. He created so many jobs. Everyone always said Obama didn't say what do what he was going to do. Do what he said he was going to do. I'm sorry, I'm getting flustered. You can't get
only if you past discount.
You can't get past a.
Only if you discount.
You can't get past a pile of crap, and then get criticized for not shoveling out the pile of crap properly. Obama, if there's anything that has been accomplished in terms of unemployment, in terms of a better pay scale, in terms of anything under Mr. Trump, it is only possible because of the groundwork that President Obama...
All right.
Let me speak for a moment.
You're a crazy lady.
I'm sorry. Let me speak for a moment. Under the groundwork that President Obama laid when he was handed a pile of crap from our last Republican president. He was handed a pile of crap and made it into a smaller pile of crap.
I need you.
Yes, he did not. No, he didn't fix everything because he's not a magician or a warlock. But he fixed things the best he could with the pile of crap he was handed when I graduated from college the same year the economy collapsed.
I need you to live in the same world as the rest of us.
I do live.
Okay.
I live really hardly, really, really, very really in the world that the rest of us live in.
Do you recall the corporate tax rate reduction that was passed at the end of last year?
Yes.
That resulted in bonus checks going out to tens of thousands of employees all over the country. That resulted in employers deciding they were going to...
How is that on Obama?
That has nothing to do with Obama. You're telling me Obama laid the groundwork for... Obama laid the groundwork for nothing. There was record low job...
Well, he did lay the groundwork for something if Donald Trump hadn't been elected.
You've had your chance to talk. Okay? My turn. Record low workforce participation during the Obama years. So all of the talk about lowered unemployment during his time in office was smoke and mirrors. And this is understood, and this has been documented. Workforce participation under President Donald Trump back up to historical averages, which means not only has the unemployment rate gone down, but a lot of people who had given up on the job market are now back in it and have jobs. Companies are hiring because of the tax deduction. Companies are building new factories and bringing new business to the United States because it is becoming a more attractive environment because of President Trump.
But it's as a result of tax deductions that are benefiting CEOs, that are benefiting chairmen of the board.
No.
That are benefiting. Derek, you know I am a comedian, a radio host for a nonprofit organization, and a waitress and bartender. I have seen none of my life benefited by the fact that Donald Trump is president. If anything, my life has been detrimented by the fact that Donald Trump is president. I worry every single time that I have some kind of non-pregnancy related, not anything related, woman issue, I worry every single time that it's not going to be covered by the health insurance that, thank you, Mitt Romney, that I got through being a citizen of Massachusetts. For the most part, every single one of the rights that I have spent my entire adult life fighting to get and have gotten, he's opposed. I don't make more money because Donald Trump is president. If anything, my health insurance is... I went to the dentist last week. And he said, thank God you have no cavities and don't need any further procedures, because Mass Health will no longer cover what it used to cover under President Trump. This is Trump's America that I am living in.
He did not make that decision unilaterally, by the way.
He made it with all of his advisors and then the Republican dominated Congress and blah, 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 blah. You can't look at this
as Congress voted
as
to repeal Obamacare.
Under his advisement. You can't look at this you can't look at this as the He-Man Woman Haters Club. And if you do, actually, you know what? That's kind of accurate.
If you are in that narrow segment of society that has benefited in no meaningful way from Trump presidency, all right, I can understand the frustration. I can understand why you're angry at the guy. The reality is, a vast majority of Americans have benefited from this presidency so far in multiple ways, the least of which is the stock market and the valuations in the stock market right now, which have been climbing since he was elected.
So many Americans have stock in the stock market.
Yes.
It's really nice that my brother and my father and all the douchebags I went to college with are benefiting from Donald Trump being
president. What about everybody who has an IRA or a 401k plan?
Everybody?
And is saving for retirement.
Do you know how many?
80 million Americans?
I have been to 42 out of the 48 contiguous United States. I have made a point to speak to all the people that live in those places while I've been there. You think that they even know what an IRA is, let alone have one? These are people who got duped into thinking this man was going to save them when he's actually screwing them over and helping out his own, who do have 401ks and IRAs. Do you know who doesn't have that? Me. And I went to college, a very good college, mind you. And I grew up in a very nice family. And I grew up in a very intellectual area of the country. Should I call my friend Becky in Nebraska and ask her how she's feeling about what's going on in the Trump administration? Because I bet you $1 million she's going to tell you that she regrets voting for him.
That's her conclusion. That's her choice.
That's the general consensus.
No, it's not the general consensus. That is the consensus of maybe a third of the country. Maybe a third of the country.
So you're
of which you are more than happy to represent, and that's
so
and that's
you're
fine.
Cool with 66.6% of the country.
But I want you to understand.
Actually, that's not even true because that's not a third of the country. I would say that the people who like him are a third of the country. If anything, 66.6666666 is the percentage that does not situation.
He's got a 51% approval in the latest Rasmussen, which means the independents are coming over. And he's always
those are the people who are talking.
And he's always
there
had
are a lot of
the Democrats. He's always
who
had
are
the
too
Republicans.
Busy to participate in polls because they're too busy trying to find out how they're going to pay for their kids' stitches.
See, the problem here
or their groceries
is with you
or their health care.
This is where the problem lies. And this is where
the problem
I would like to see you expand your thinking, because it doesn't matter.
My brother's a libertarian. My father is a.
This is about you.
Oh,
you specifically. Doesn't matter what good he does. Doesn't matter how much anyone benefits. If Shay Spillane isn't doing okay, then everything in the world is wrong.
No, that's not true.
That's what you've been saying for the last 5 minutes.
That's literally the opposite of what I've been saying for the last 5 minutes. I've been talking about everyone except myself. I talked about my friend who lives in Nebraska. I talked about my friends who live in California. I've talked about my friends here.
You're not seeing what I'm saying.
I am.
You're not.
You're being ignorant about saying that it's all about me. I don't think that it's all about me. It, of course, is not all about me. If the amount of travels that I've done, the amount of people I've met have taught me anything, it's that I have become painfully, depressingly aware of the fact that it's not all about me. 5 years ago, I was pumped to have it be all about me. I've learned through meeting people, through traveling the country, through trying to make myself more adept in the area of politics and public opinion and news and everything, that it's all about everyone. And that's personally, honestly, insulting that you would say I'm trying to make it all about me. I'm making it about everybody. I'm making it about the people that I lived next door to, who half of them were illegal and half of them weren't, and they were trying to figure out how they were going to make that okay under our president. I'm thinking about the fact that I can't get adequate health care, or actually, I can get somewhat adequate health care, but half my friends can't. Because of this president, because he's trying to disband what gave us the opportunity to do so. I'm thinking about the many Mexican friends that I have that are destroyed by the fact that though they are citizens, their parents are not. And he's going to try to send them back over the border. I'm thinking about the fact that he has this absurd idea of building a giant wall between our countries when honestly, who gives a word I can't say on the radio? It's the whole point of this country is to allow foreigners in so they can make a better lives for themselves.
No, No. That was never the point of this country.
Really? Do you want to go back in time and ask the Puritans about that? Because they all wanted to be Protestant. And England was like, nah, boo.
They weren't exactly too keen on people moving into their space.
Well,
ask Roger Williams why he went down to Providence.
Oh, my God. Should we ask the Statue of Liberty?
Yes, you can ask the Statue of Liberty if you want to. But
I'm pretty sure that she would respond to you with...
Yeah. No, that is not...
I'm done. Honestly, you can't. I understand. He hasn't brought us to nuclear apocalypse. But
he's actually preventing one.
Is he?
Oh, if what's going on in North Korea is to be believed, yes.
Is to be believed is the operative statement.
Well, we don't know until the agreement has been signed and both sides live up to it, but we're further down that path than we've been in 60 years.
I mean, we participated in the Olympics in Germany in 1939. We can't... I mean... It's not even absurd. It's naive to trust anything that North Korea is doing, and especially that Donald Trump is doing at this point. I mean, I've spent the last 2 years trying, hoping that he would prove me wrong. And at every corner, he hasn't.
Well, now that he's on the verge of doing it, that pessimism is still there.
He's been on the verge of, we're going to fix this. Nope, we didn't. We're going to fix this. Nope, we didn't.
They fixed a bunch of things. Nope, actually,
we didn't.
They fixed a bunch of things. Go take a look at what's happening in corporate America right now. Go ask somebody who's 2 years from retirement.
Corporate America, you mean like 10% of the population?
That's more than 10% of the population.
Everything he's doing is for the benefit of the top 10%.
Not true.
Really? Because I know about, I don't know, 500 people that would disagree with you.
There is nothing anyone can do in this country that does not benefit the top 10%. So you could make that argument about anyone. Hillary Clinton would be doing things that would benefit the top 10%.
No, but
Bernie Sanders would be doing things that would benefit the top 10%.
No, but the difference between that is that it wouldn't be at the detriment of the bottom 90%.
If he slaps a 70% tax rate on the top 2% of earners in the country, are you happy?
I mean, he's not going to do
that. What does it take? That's the question. What does it take?
Taking the entire country, poor, lower middle class, upper middle class, middle class, rich, super rich, all of them into account. That is what a president is supposed to do.
What president has ever done that? Name a president that's done that since Franklin Delano Roosevelt.
None of them. Exactly.
And even that was political expediency.
It's not a matter of... That's the thing, is that no president's going to do that 100% because they're human beings. But it's a matter of taking it a little bit into consideration.
I will grant...
A little bit into consideration that you are representing... Not yourself, not your friends, not people at the same pay scale level as you, not people who are going to be able to do something for you. The people that you represent, which is our entire country. Farmers, people living on welfare, people living on food stamps, people who are middle class and just trying to make their way. People, every single person in our country is who the president is supposed to represent, and that is not the case with Donald Trump.
I will grant you.
He does not represent me or most of the people in this country.
I will grant you.
Nor does he represent our interests.
I will grant you.
And what will be best for all of us.
Well, where North Korea is concerned.
Not some of us. All of us.
Where North Korea is concerned, I think you're wrong about that, because not getting nuked is in the best interest of the people of the United States
of
America.
That's fair, but it's also in his best interest because he's trying to stop cities. He owns major properties in major cities. This is all a business move. He owns major properties in New York, Los Angeles, Miami, I believe Chicago, Atlantic City. Where are they going to, Washington, D.C.? Where are they going to nuke if they're going to nuke somewhere? Are they going to nuke Montana?
Well, who knows? They're going to nuke the West Coast. That's what they're going to nuke. They can't actually hit Washington.
He has property there.
Yeah.
Lots of it.
Trust me.
I live there. I know.
That's not why he's doing this. Okay? He's not doing this to save some hotel.
Did you talk to him about it?
In Los Angeles. Because that's not why the State Department is involved in this. It's not why anybody is involved in this. I will grant you that if you are poor in the United States, there has been nothing in the tax code changes or any of the changes that have been enacted since he took office that directly benefits you. There has also been nothing enacted other than the repeal of Obamacare that directly harms you. Now, the repeal of Obamacare was an act of Congress, and it was necessary because Obamacare basically disintegrated before everybody's eyes. And you can go ask somebody in Arizona, you can go ask somebody in Mississippi, you can go ask somebody in Georgia, where all the insurance companies pulled out of the exchanges and said, we're not doing business here anymore. So you either wound up with no coverage because nobody was providing any insurance, or one company providing coverage that was charging 10 times what the rate was supposed to be. Obamacare failed.
Obamacare did not fail.
It failed.
It would not, let me rephrase. It would not have failed were it not for the fact that it was forced to fail by our current administration.
It failed on Obama's watch. It was failing from 2014 onward.
Oh, I'm sorry. That's weird because I had Obamacare up until Donald Trump signed in. So I don't know what you're talking about, but I had Obamacare.
I'm talking about, we talked about this on this show for years on end, how state after state was losing insurance companies. Kaiser Permanente pulled out. Aetna pulled out. Everybody was bailing on Obamacare because they were losing money on it. That's why Congress shut it down.
Oh, no. That's absolutely not why Congress shut it down.
Yes, it is.
Are you kidding? It was open until he proposed the bill to shut it down.
No.
Yes, because I had Obamacare. You can't fight me on this. I had Obamacare until it got shut down by the Trump administration.
The Republicans had been trying to shut it down for years, and they were successfully blocked by the Democrats in Congress until the point where it stopped being viable, which began happening in 2014.
That's just big fat not true. I was on Obamacare.
Fine. If you want to have this argument,
2016.
If you want to have this argument, please take it up with the New York Times. Please take it up with the Chicago Sun-Times. Please take it up with the Los Angeles Times, the Washington Post. Everyone who reported all of the insurance agencies. Please take it up with the president of Aetna, the president of Kaiser Permanente, the president of Cigna. Please have that argument with all the insurance companies that left the exchanges, all of the states that wound up with no insurance coverage left, and all of the news media that talked about how Obamacare was imploding. You can go on Google and find those answers in 3 seconds.
You can also go on Google and find the reasons that
and Trump your defense made it is happen. I had Obamacare, so that's not true.
No, my defense is not that. My defense is that I had Obamacare and read that's why this is blowing my mind, is read similar articles from all of those periodicals that said that it was still valid and said that Trump was trying to shut it down. And it's ironic to me that you, conservative friend, are citing a bunch of liberal newspapers to try to tell me that it's just me defending the fact that I still had it.
There's no liberal bias when it comes to insurance companies saying we're not going to be a part of this because it doesn't work. I don't care who reports that.
That's not insurance companies saying that.
Yes, that was Kaiser Permanente. That was Aetna.
Oh, cute.
That was Cigna.
Because I have Blue Cross Blue Shield right now through MassHealth.
Blue Cross Blue Shield was one of the few that did not say we're pulling out of every market.
Because insurance companies, much like our president, are buttheads.
No.
They look for one thing, which is money.
Yes.
They don't care about the, what is it? 2 billion citizens of our country.
It is a business proposition. Are we making money or are we losing money?
Yes. And that was precisely my point, is that everything in Donald Trump's presidency is a business proposition.
Yeah, but it's the same thing with the insurance companies, which is why Obamacare died.
Not negating my point. Actually, you're kind of inflating my point, which is that it's all a matter of greed and people not caring about their citizens, caring about the bottom line, which is how much money they make. And that is precisely, thank you for proving my point, which is that you saying insurance companies backed out actually proves my point more. Because it's a matter of not caring about a country's citizens and their well-being and their ability to be healthy and to succeed. It's a matter of profiting off their unhealthiness.
Your point was that President Trump shut down Obamacare and took it away from you.
Yes, but based on the principles that you just laid out by saying that other insurance companies took it away from him. Anyways, in entertainment news.
We're not up to entertainment news.
We are, actually.
No, we're not. Sports.
Who cares about sports, though?
Everybody cares about sports. All eyes turn to Dallas tomorrow night for the NFL draft, which will see all 32 NFL teams shaping the future of their franchises. The Cleveland Browns will pick first and are widely expected to take either quarterback Sam Darnold of USC or Josh Rosen of UCLA. The New York Giants are widely expected to take top running back prospect Saquon Barkley with the second pick, while the Jets and Broncos are also expected to nab quarterbacks with the third and fifth picks, making this one of the strongest drafts for quarterbacks in recent years. The New England Patriots will pick twice in the first round at 23rd and 31st and are expected to take defensive linemen in both slots.
This is a shakeup year for football, I feel like.
Gronk's coming back, kids. We just found that out yesterday.
Thank goodness.
Gronk's coming back. Brady's coming back.
Brown's coming back. Brady's coming back.
This is a shakeup year because you've got five quarterback prospects that are potential franchise quarterbacks. And you've got Saquon Barkley, who every indication is this guy is going to be an Ezekiel Elliott level running back right now. And you've got teams that don't normally get top draft picks, like the New York Giants, sitting at the top of the board. I think the Browns are going to find a way to screw it up because it's what they do. They're the Browns. They're the lovable punching bag of the NFL. Yeah,
that's quite true.
But for the Jets, who have some serious needs in this division, where New England, as much as we hate to admit it, is fading.
Oh, absolutely. Like, the amount of people who have tossed their hat in the ring for a trade, you look and next year is going to be, as they call it, a rebuilding year.
Yes. For the Denver Broncos, who've been flailing ever since Peyton Manning walked out the door, this is going to be an interesting one.
Well, I can't legitimize having a crush on Gronk if he plays for another team. So
it wasn't that he was going to play for another team. He was just going to get out entirely, but he's coming back.
Get it, Gronk.
He is going to go down to the Kentucky Derby and watch that racehorse that shares his name that he just bought a piece of.
It's like my favorite story I've read in the past couple weeks.
that's sort of like, I got to believe the people that own that horse knew this was going to happen. It's like, horse racing is expensive. Oh, name it after Gronk. And if it wins, he'll buy it.
If ever there was a sound investment.
I wouldn't know where there were a lot of horse people up in Buffalo.
Are you kidding? What else did they have to do? Well, in entertainment news, now appropriately timed, actor Hank Azaria said he's willing to step aside from voicing the character of Apu. Oh, it's going to be hard. Nahasapimatilion. I'm sorry. I don't watch The Simpsons.
Nahasapimatilion. If you watch The Simpsons, you know this.
I don't watch The Simpsons.
Why don't you watch The Simpsons? Oh, it hasn't been funny for 15 years.
That's why. Nahasapimatilion. Is that close enough, at least? On The Simpsons, following recent criticism that the character advances stereotypes. Appearing on The Late Show with Stephen Colbert last night, Azaria spoke about the controversy surrounding Apu, the Indian Quickie Mart proprietor. In November, the comedian Hari Kondabolu's released The Problem with Apu, a documentary focused on the character and overall negative representation of South Asians in media. The film features Kondabolu and fellow comedians Aziz Ansari, Hassan Minhaj, Aparna Chawla, among others, discussing the character and how he's affected their lives. Kondabalu said that while he and Azaria have yet to have a conversation about Apu's legacy, he would be very open to it.
Can we just stop?
Please? I know. I'm getting tired.
Can we have anything?
It's made me, honestly, even all this like Louis C.K. stuff, all the female, like, let's be like super aware of sexual harassment. Light sexual harassment is what has made me a good comedian.
The Simpsons themselves slapped this thing away a couple of weeks ago with a visual joke. And it was actually pretty funny. And pretty much pointed out that this whole, you know, the trouble with Apu or whatever this thing is called. This is a look at me documentary. You know, this is young people used to write memoirs that nobody wanted to read because they were young and had no idea what they were talking about. Now they make movies. Now they make documentaries that basically say, oh, look at me. I've arrived and I'm important and you should pay attention to me. Uh-huh. And this is on Dabalu's game. You know, it's like, oh, look, I made an important documentary about this horrible racist character that's been under our noses. And everybody's sitting there going like, Simpsons fans, Indian Americans, everybody's sitting around going like, Apu?
Well, it's absolutely...
upset about Apu?
It's like if I made a documentary about people being mean to tall women.
Yeah. Let's hope to God this guy never sees a Harold and Kumar movie because I think his head's right? going to explode. You know? And there has been a lot of backlash against this documentary and against this filmmaker because this is clearly a look at me, look at me, look at me, I'm woke, I'm important kind of thing. And to have Hank Azaria get into this is just stupid.
Well, and just unnecessary. It's a matter of, you know, I lived in LA for about 3 years and I do think it was a valuable experience in terms of understanding the world, understanding what this industry is like. But I did, one of the biggest things I took away from it is that people will pounce on anything that they can to make themselves relevant. And this is definitely an example of that.
Yeah.
Apu has been a character on The Simpsons since what? When I was 2 years old?
Yeah.
Like, when did The Simpsons come out?
1989.
Okay, so yeah, I was probably 2 or 3 years old.
1989 was a Christmas special.
And now we're suddenly upset about Apu?
Yeah.
And it's suddenly not okay for me to make anti-feminist comments on stage. Not even, and by the way, I don't mean anti-feminist comments in that I'm against the feminist movement. I mean, girls come up to me and say, that was like kind of anti-feminist.
Yeah.
And I'm like, you realize you're saying that to a female comedian who just spoke on stage for 20 minutes. Like, is this really the milk box you want to stand on?
See, I just respond by saying, I'm a self-hating woman and you're shaming me. So, you know, please step away from my empowerment space.
You're allowed to have your opinions. Yeah. I'm allowed to have mine. But this is, I do think, I mean, everyone is largely, I've noticed lately in the media, the entertainment industry more specifically, that people are, for lack of a better word, exploiting the things that are happening in popular culture right now in terms of racism, in terms of sexism. There are a lot of things that people wouldn't even have issue with unless they looked and were like, hey, I can take issue with this thing.
Yeah.
And it'll get me some buzz. It'll get me some press.
That's it. That's why I say it's a look at me.
It's, yeah.
Look at me. Look at me. I'm saying important
things. It's like,
things.
If you really cared about this, you would have talked about it. Like I said, Apu has been, I'm going to be 32 years old next week. If Apu really bothered you, you would have started talking about him 20 years ago.
Yeah.
Or at least 15, 10 years ago. This is I found something that's going to get me some buzz. Let me pounce on it. It's not, and it's part of why I had to leave Los Angeles is that I hate when people ingenuinely act like they're an activist. If you're an activist, be an activist. Get all over that. But if you're just looking for a way to get famous, I don't know, like put a banana peel in front of your buddy's skateboard. Do something that doesn't pretend to be something.
But keep in mind, Hollywood loves this because it distracts from the overdoses and the pedophiles running around out there.